Hi, this is Ken Arnold from the Night Watchman, and you are listening to Extra Features Podcast.
Hey, welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features. Today we have great people on, my regular friends. I have Doug, and I have Daniel. Welcome, guys. Welcome back to this crazy world we live in.
Hello.
Greetings and salutations.
I got to tell you guys, since they canceled the hockey season, the basketball season, and any other sport I might have some interest in, I have never watched so many bad movies in a row in my life.
You gotta watch TV. You gotta watch TV shows. There's lots of high-quality TV shows out there.
I did watch Flash. I'm caught up. I'm still behind on Supergirl. I watched another episode of Lock and Key, so I've seen two now. And I've just been cleaning off my pile of crap I have to watch. From Spring Break Bikini to Dragon Vengeance.
Damn.
And they are terrible. They were never going to review them on this show.
And introduce your kids to the old classics. We watched The Exorcist, so.
I did start a new franchise with my younger daughter today. We started Stage Center, which is about a ballet studio.
Okay.
A show?
No, a movie. It's got Zoe Saldana in it, Peter Gallagher.
Okay.
And we'll see. I'd never heard of it. I found it on one of my finds out at Salvation Army that has dollar DVDs. And I picked it up because like, I've never heard of this. And there's three of them, so I'll be watching them. You can follow me on Letterboxd at Extra Features. And get all of my, rate and review everything there. Not really a review, but that's for Twitter. So what have you been up to, Doug?
I've been rewatching The Final Destination. Oh, you guys are, I feel like you're talking over me. I don't know. My connection might be bad.
Oh, we're not trying to.
I can't jump. I know, sir. I just can't jump in.
I can hear you now. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying I've been rewatching the Final Destination movies.
Oh. Doug, what
else? I watched, I blew through season 3 of Castlevania on Netflix.
I've never finished number one.
Number one was the weakest.
Okay.
It picks up a lot of steam in seasons 2 and 3, and it's the most Warren Ellis thing on TV, and I'm a huge Warren Ellis fan.
So am I. Okay, maybe I'll try. Maybe I'll try again. And also, since I have no sports to watch, I read some comics for the first time in 6 months.
Nice.
So a friend of mine works at the store, gives me all the free comic book day, and gave me the first 5 issues of Savage Avengers and a few FFs, and I enjoyed them. First time I read comics almost a year.
Awesome.
So, I don't think I'll be returning, but I do enjoy Lock and Key, but it's not as bloody as the comic, which I did love. Okay, any movie news, guys?
Scream 5 was announced with the directors of Ready or Not.
I don't know if we're even going to get Scream 5 with this crazy virus. I hopefully it ends soon, and then we can all go back to going to movies and see films. I kind of miss getting out of my house and going, you know, salvaging like I normally do for lost films that nobody's heard of.
Now you just have to bring a lot of Lysol wipes.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm hoping with the warm weather that it helps it out. Because, I mean, I don't know. It's just I don't feel comfortable going to a movie theater.
Yeah, I did on the weekend, and but my theater, they're doing, so you have the 2 love seats, and then there's 2 in between where you can't sit. So they're doing, like, the social distancing thing, but I think I'm still going to stay home this week.
But what about social distancing when you're getting popcorn?
Oh, I didn't get snacks.
Well, my gym, my wife's giving me crap for going to the gym, but I love to go. And they have social distancing on the cardio machines, but not on the weight machines.
See, I feel like with a gym, just everyone's touching the equipment. So, like, I feel like that would be a bad place, and so would, like, a casino, because everyone touches things there.
Well, the casino's closed, and I do wear gloves. My fingers are loose, but I do wash my hands before I go.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but with the movie theater, you don't know who was sitting in that seat before you at the showing beforehand.
Well,
yeah,
go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead, Simon.
Okay.
No, my bad.
I was just about to say is, are we finally going to see pay-per-view movies? Like,
maybe.
Because if this goes on, let's say, for 6 months, I don't think it will, but I'm hoping not. are we actually going to see movies on VOD for like $25? So Doug and his family could see The Hunt at home.
Oh, man.
But it'll cost them $25.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess that's fair because, I mean, I spent $25 to go see it with my mom. But, yeah, on a smaller screen, I don't know if that's $25 is worth it.
Yeah, well, Doug's got a family of four. Doug, that's going to be a $40 to $50 experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Then you add on snacks. You're easily talking $100 to go to a movie as a family of four.
Well, yeah, because I was going to go see Bond, but they delayed it because of the virus. And, I mean, that would be a $150 night. Me and my wife would have gone out for dinner, probably had a few drinks. And then we would have got nice seats, and I doubt we would have bought popcorn or anything, but I mean, I would have spent $75 on dinner outside. So.
Yeah, it's expensive to go to movies now, and I don't know, it's not worth the risk at the moment. You have to weigh the risk and rewards, and no movie right now to me is worth coming home and infecting my family.
I absolutely agree with you.
I like The Hunt, but yeah, it's not worth the fact.
Well, I guess my question is, let's say we're done with movies. They cancel them all this week. So nothing gets released. When are they getting dumped? In the summer?
Well, like, Fast and Furious was delayed for a full year, so we're getting Furious 9 next July.
But is anybody worried about that? Like, that film's going to do fine, wherever it is.
Yeah. Well, I think smaller films could find new life on, like, Netflix could come in and distribute it, or they could Amazon Prime. There are other ways that smaller films can get seen now.
But I meant things are getting theatrical releases, like scheduled to release this week. Where do they go?
Theaters, but, yeah, I mean, there's not a major release until Trolls, which is April 10th, and even if that still happens. Because there's what, two or three wide releases every week, and there's none next weekend.
Oh, I think Mulan was supposed to be next weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 27th.
Okay, so Trolls is 3 weeks away, so we should know what's going on a little bit better in the world than 3 weeks. I mean, we are seeing some place where it originated is starting to slow down a bit.
But that took 3 months.
Right. But, I mean, hopefully that us in North America knew it was coming, that we were a little more precautionary than other places.
And I don't know if Canada's doing a great job about it with the border, but this isn't a political one.
Well, we're not going to go there. But maybe Doug wants to. Doug, you did say you had something to say, or you're going to wait for that later when we get to the movie.
I'll wait till we get to the movie.
Okay. Are we going to start doing movies now?
Let's do it.
Okay. Our first stop is Invisible Man, which would be Kevin this week because he's not here.
Hey. Starring Elizabeth Moss, Aldous Hodge, Harriet Dyer, Storm Reid, Oliver Jackson Cohen, and Michael Dornan.
So, I guess I could start, because I actually liked the film this year, so I'm quite impressed. I really, really like this film. I'm expecting nothing of it, and I mean nothing. I gotta say, they got the premise of The Invisible Man perfect. The first 20 minutes of this film was phenomenal. And I love the opening credits. And the opening credits when the waves are hitting the rocks, perfect. Suspense, perfect. End of the film, perfect. I would even say I would watch An Invisible Man 2. I don't care if it's just as good as this. I like this world. I like this concept. I like everything they did in the film. I thought I had a little bit of problems in the middle. A tiny bit. I mean, just a couple things didn't really do it for me. But I love the ending. I thought the ending was good. Didn't see it coming. I thought it was a little weird at times, but I'll leave it at that. We'll get into it later, I hope. Daniel? Doug?
Yeah, I love this film. Lee Whannell's direction of it, like all the camera angles where it could be him watching, like when they're doing the ladder scene and it's just from the other side of the hallway. I've seen this twice now, and I could see myself rewatching this because just picking up any little hints throughout. Yeah, the direction is great. Elizabeth Moss is amazing. I'm a stickler for in movie. Everyone's seen it here, right?
Yes.
Okay, we spoil stuff, by the way. Yeah, but I'm a stickler for people like talking in movies. But I had an involuntary no when the knife raised at the red dinner.
Okay.
Like, and it was just involuntary. I was like, no. It was awesome. And yeah, the tension was great. Yeah, I didn't expect much of this either, but I thought the story was well done, and it's a great update for like modern audiences as well.
Yeah, I agree that Elizabeth Moss just, she held the movie together. She was the linchpin on screen. Lee Whannell was the linchpin off screen, directing everything. Those two together were fantastic. They created a hugely suspenseful film. It was political without being political. It showed, you know, the whole Me Too and her being afraid of pretty much any man out there. The opening, I thought the biggest scare for me was her walking to the mailbox and then that dude jogging up behind her. I thought that was fantastically done. It yeah. showed her fear was real. And, yeah, it was very good. I did have two minor problems with it. One minor problem, when she goes back to the house, the dog is there. If he's dead, how did the dog get there? Wouldn't the cops take the dog? I rationalized that by they gave the dog to the brother. The brother knew he was still alive, so he gave the dog back. But if that was the case, why was everything still covered as if nobody lived there? That fucked the hell out of me.
Yes, it seemed like the... Oh, sorry. No, go on. Love it.
Oh, no. You could go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it seemed like the dog ran away when she took off the Shaw collar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he came back for
food. Could the dog couldn't really escape, though, because it was a fenced-in compound.
You're right. Shit.
But my other problem, actually, my son Owen pointed this out. This was at the diner's the dinner scene. Wouldn't a restaurant like that have video cameras so they could see what actually happened? Like, there probably shouldn't really have been a reason why she should have been afraid of being sentenced to life in jail, because if they watched a video replay, they could see that she was not holding the knife. But aside from that, the film was fantastic.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, especially when at the asylum or whatever it is. Yeah, they'd have video cameras for all the guards getting killed, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to go to this is such a minor point for me. When Storm Reid gets hit in the face in the living room,
mm-hmm.
looked terrible to me. I said, nope, Mr. Bot, did not buy that for a second. It just did not look right to me. And I also think there's a good tell in this film at the beginning of the film when she leaves and she grabs the suit and looks at it.
Mm-hmm.
So she must know what's going on then.
Like in the...
when she first leaves, she definitely pauses on that suit.
Well, I don't think she knew what that suit was at that point.
See, I would argue she does, or has an idea.
Okay.
I think she could have an inkling, but then she is like, oh, he's dead. Okay.
Because she uses it at the end.
Well, yeah, because that's... I mean, she clues in when she does the... She presses the button, and it reveals that it's the invisible suit. And then she puts it in the vent, right?
Yeah. I just think she had some idea. I really do. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, given when she says, like, oh, he'll go up behind her and she wouldn't even know he was there. Yeah. So, I mean, I think she just thinks, oh, he's dead, so I'm safe for now. But the paranoia is still always there. I don't know.
And why did this guy tell his brother if he's so secretive? That's what I was trying to figure out. He doesn't trust anybody. And that's not. Why would he tell his brother?
I think was she being gaslighted? And so he could, so he could try to get away with it. Because the first time I saw it, I wasn't really sure what happened. But the second time I realized, oh, she's not even following anyone. So, yeah, he just called him, be like, oh, kill her, kill the girl, and then I'll go begin that kidnapping case. So he just went back to his house.
Honestly, I think the brother was just his scapegoat. I think he was just manipulating his brother, trying to make it seem like, yeah, we're both in this together, but I think he always intended to sell his brother down the river.
So do I. I definitely feel by that as a theory. So, do you think this film deserves a number two? Or will it be?
What would be the number two, though?
I just think another story. Like, I know it doesn't have to be these characters, but just another Invisible Man story. I mean, if we have the same writer, he might have another idea.
Yeah.
Well, she did leave with the suit at the end, so yes. There is a suit out there. She has it. She knows how to use it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd buy, like, her, like, killing people, though.
Well, it may not be her.
I don't know.
It might not be. I was thinking maybe she could become a secret agent. She could be a spy. Take the franchise in a whole different direction.
Okay.
Well, they did it with Angel and Buffy, so I'll go with that.
I think, I'm pretty sure Elizabeth Banks is set to direct an Invisible Woman movie.
That'll have nothing to do with this movie, though.
Okay, but would that be confusing for people if a movie called The Invisible Woman came out?
Maybe. They're bringing it out.
Ooh, Elizabeth Moss. But it's like, nope, it's Elizabeth Banks.
But have they seen Elizabeth Banks direct Pitch Perfect 3 and Charlie's Angels are both terribly directed films. Charlie's Angels is deplorable.
I haven't seen it yet. But no, if she did Pitch Perfect 2, I think that one's pretty good.
3. She directed 3.
She did 2.
She did 2 too? 2's not bad.
No, she did 2, only 2.
Oh, my bad then. Because 3's not good. Okay. Well, Charlie's Angels was a train wreck. She can't direct action films. At all. She has no
sense. That's probably why you thought she did 3. Because it's like the fat Amy action.
Oh, just awful. Well, I think it's a full recommend for Invisible Man all around.
Yeah, I give it a perfect score.
Go ahead, Daniel, since you're dying to tell everyone.
I just literally said I gave it a perfect score. 10 out of 10.
Well, there you go, everyone. You can find mine on Letterboxd or Twitter. Take your choice. Where are we going next, boys?
I'd give it about a 7.
Oh, me and Doug are equal.
Spoiler, guys, Simon gave it an 8.
I gave it an 8, sorry. Okay, where are we going next? Call of the Wild?
Yes, Call of the Wild. Starring Harrison Ford, Omar Sy, Dan Stevens, Karen Gillan, Carrie G., Bradley Whitford, and a terrible CGI dog.
No, more than one terrible CGI dog.
About 12. But he was the one very, very bad one, though.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay, during it, I didn't think it was that bad. I thought there was two great sequences. Like, the part of the movie that I actually liked was when he was a sled dog with Omar Sy. I thought the ice scene was very good. I thought the avalanche scene was very good. But looking back on it, it kind of falls apart as soon as he chokeslams the Siberian Husky. the CGI is, the dog CGI is bad. He does things a dog should not be able to do. Harrison Ford isn't even in it till later, but he narrates the whole time. And that doesn't make sense because he's not with the buck the whole time. And Dan Stevens, I have a big problem with this character. He's just there to chew the scenery. And
Karen Gillan's only in it for like 5 minutes.
What?
Karen Gillan's only in it for 5 minutes.
All she does is she sits on the sled and says, oh, no, don't shoot the dogs.
That's pretty much it. I've seen the original. I haven't seen the 1931 version, I think, or 27. I've not seen, but I've seen the second one. And watching this one, I was expecting the film I had seen with, I think, Heston's in it. And I'm like, this is nothing. It's similar, but, I mean, the dog race isn't really the main part of the movie, which is it is in the movie I saw. I thought this film, the dog looked out of place 24/7. It never looked right to me. And the more the film went on, I'm like, where are we going here? And when he fell in the water, the woman fell in the water, and the dog got the pole and saved her, I'm like, I just don't care. I found myself drifting constantly throughout this film. I was losing interest. And that scene when Dan Stevens comes to kill Harrison Ford was so badly shot, I'm like, this is ridiculous. And can you explain one more thing to me? How does Harrison Ford narrate the rest of the film if he's dead?
Spoiler duck. But no, you weren't going to see it. But yeah, I know. I was like, wait, did he die? Because how is he narrating it right now? He's narrating it from beyond the grave? No, was he narrating the whole movie from beyond the grave?
I think my favorite scene is Buck. Isn't the dog's name Buck, if I remember?
Yeah, Buck.
Buck starts making out with a wolf, and they have wolf babies. What the hell was that?
I didn't realize they made out. But yeah, like the babies come out, it's like, oh, alright.
What? Why?
Yeah. Yeah, but him, I've never seen a dog chokeslam a Siberian
Husky. Dan Stevens' character is just introduced for what? No reason. He has nothing to do other than try and kill Harrison Ford for the gold. Because he thinks Harrison Ford found gold, and Harrison Ford just found this log cabin he liked.
He did find gold, but yeah, I mean, I think he's where it was just like, you know what, this isn't working. Because I think this type of movie works well enough without a main antagonist, because I think the, like, Colin finding his purpose, I guess. Like, the man versus nature, I think, suffices well enough.
Well, yeah, like I said, I'm going to go back to the one I saw. It's all about the dog race. And that's what the film was mainly about. This one does a little bit of the dog race and then has this side story with Harrison Ford, which I'm like, where is this coming from?
Wait, which year was the one, or is the one you're talking about?
71 or 72, probably.
So it's like an actual dog race?
Yeah, Call of the Wild is a dog race. I mean, it has a little bit at the beginning, and then pretty much the film's the dog race in it.
Okay, I love dog races. I'll have to watch this one.
Okay, I'm not saying it's a good film. Just saying it does have a dog race.
I just looked it up, and it was like a six. I was like, okay. But no, yeah, I mean, I feel like I would have been interested if like it had more of the first third, because I liked that part.
Well, I liked the first third. I thought the first third was somewhat solid.
Yeah.
I was like, the CGI dog kept taking me out.
Yeah, I couldn't get emotionally attached because it's like, dogs don't look that human. And they can't do half the stuff he does.
I felt the film was just all over the place. It's like they had two different scripts and molded them together. And add Harrison Ford just try to seam them, stitch them to keep them together. Oh, it was just a terrible film. Bordering on unwatchable by the end.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I didn't mind it during, I guess, but there was two people in front of me on their phone the whole time, so I think that was just like, oh, that distracted me from how mediocre it is.
Like I said, don't be on the phone near me in any movie.
Yeah, well, I will destroy you if you're on your phone.
No, I just yell at them. Turn it off. Well, I don't care what you're doing. Leave the theater. Goodbye. There's no discussion topic.
Yeah, like the one guy that I couldn't see, he literally had his phone on like a low brightness setting until the dog fight.
Oh,
for 3 minutes.
That's,
I know,
too long.
Yeah.
You know what you needed, Dan? You needed Just Mercy from this.
Oh, that's, I like that transition. Just Mercy starring Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Foxx, Brie Larson, Rob Morgan, Tim Blake Nelson, Rafe Spall, and O'Shea Jackson Jr.
You're up, Doug.
All right, well, this was based on the true story of Brian Stevenson, a lawyer who makes it his life mission to help inmates on death row. And And I'll be honest, I never thought I'd see a movie where Michael B. Jordan was the weakest link in the acting. But this movie was the miracle that proved that. I'm not saying he was bad. I'm just saying compared to Jamie Foxx, Jamie Foxx blew him out of the water in this film. I kept wanting to get back to Jamie Foxx every time Michael B. Jordan was on the screen. Michael B. Jordan was good. He just was not nearly as dynamic as Jamie Foxx was. His scenes in the jail where he's talking to the other inmates in the other cells, those were heart-wrenching and also uplifting at the same time, the way they supported each other. I loved everything with Jamie Lee Foxx in this movie. There was one scene with Michael B. Jordan where he's sitting at the dinner table in his button-down shirt. His muscles were just popping out of that shirt. You cannot take the Creed out of Michael B. Jordan. He's just always going to be Apollo Creed. I'm sorry, not Apollo. Crap, now I'm blanking on the name. Adonis Creed.
Daniel?
Yeah, honestly, I like Michael B. Jordan, but I agree. Jamie Foxx is way better. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think you I never wanted Michael B. Jordan never to be on screen. But, yeah, Jamie Foxx stole it. And Rob Morgan, as the other prisoner, I thought his subplot was really interesting. I liked Tim Blake Nelson, what he brought to the film. And just the fact that it just establishes that the justice system is the villain and not him, I thought that was interesting. And Brie Larson held her own pretty well, too.
Okay, let's start on Brie Larson. This is a paycheck movie for her. She doesn't really have a lot to do. She's just there for star power. I really would argue that. And Jamie Foxx, again, was excellent. I like the criminals more than I like Michael G. Jordan. I enjoyed their stories and how he's going to help them. And I like how he had problems getting things started, that nobody wanted to work with him. Nobody wanted to fund him. I thought that was good. And I quite enjoyed that stuff. I thought it was well cast. Again, do we need this story? I mean, it was interesting, but not great. I mean,
These false accusation movies are my favorite types of movies. Like, one of them. Like, sports movies and this, like, these are my favorite, like, subgenres of, like, drama movies. Or comedy or what have you. Well, for sports, I don't think there's any false accusation comedies up there. But one part I really liked was just the irony that they're celebrating To Kill a Mockingbird, and they're just being such bigots.
Yes.
I thought that was brilliant.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, there is depth in this film, but again, I just felt I was spoon-feed a wiki page.
And okay.
I find that with a lot of these films, I feel like I'm spoon-fed a wiki page. Like Dark Waters, which I don't think we've done on the show, I feel the same thing. It was just a wiki page again.
I definitely like this one better than Dark Waters.
I think this is better than Dark Waters, yes, agreeable. But I mean, I didn't love it. I thought the acting was great. I thought everybody was fine. I mean, I do agree with Michael B. Jordan. It's got a little bit more work to do on drama. I will totally give Doug that. But I mean, I don't think there's a lot to talk about here. I really feel it's just a straightforward drama.
Apparently,
we could talk about Destin Daniel Cretton, the writer-director of this film. Brie Larson was in it because he gave her big film break in a short-term 12.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But his next movie is actually going to be Shang-Chi for Marvel.
Aha. Uh-huh.
He's writing and directing the Shang-Chi film.
And which is being on postponement because of the virus right now.
Yep. Yes. Okay.
So
wasn't Brie Larson's big break 21 Jump Street?
No. Short-term 12 was her first film.
Short-term 12, but
I think drama-wise. Drama,
that's true.
What film?
Short-term 12.
Short-term 12?
I saw that. Did you say something after that? Never mind.
Daniel mentioned 21 Jump Street.
Which I loved, but I knew her before that. I knew her from Short Term 12. Actually, I knew her from United States of Terror. It's the first time I ever saw Brie Larson.
Okay. I think she was in Sleepover in the mid-2000s.
She was. I've seen that too.
Though, one thing I just wanted to mention quickly. See, it's definitely a movie about Bryan Stevenson and how he helped everyone, but I felt like O'Shea Jackson could have got his own movie, because they got the end, it's like how he helped him, but I just found it kind of awkward how we actually never saw him meet with Stevenson at the time, because he gets released so many years later, right?
I guess so. I guess, I mean, you can only do so much, right? O'Shea Jackson's character is not the star. Jamie Foxx is. So we're going to spend the most time with him.
Oh, yeah. I felt like it was a bit wasted of O'Shea Jackson. And that was just my main complaint, I guess.
Okay. So, Lantiques is up next, I think. Did I say it right?
Atlantique. I don't know. Netflix movie premiered at Cannes, directed by Matty Diop, but I don't think anyone who listens to this podcast would know any of the stars. So, and I can't pronounce them, to be honest.
I want to know, I sent Doug a text, I'll be fully honest, asked him how he even knew about this film. So, Doug, tell us why we're doing this film.
Okay, I am a huge fan of the Criterion Collection and what they do with their Blu-ray and DVD releases. They usually pick very interesting movies or historically important films. And once Roma was released from Netflix under Criterion Blu-ray, they announced they would also be doing four other films. The Irishman, Marriage Story, American Factory, and this film, The Atlantics, which I had never heard of before. But I know Criterion picks quality films. So I immediately was interested in the film and wanted to see it.
Yeah, I had this on my list, but it's probably not one I would watch on my own, to be honest.
Hold on. No, I'm not letting you off that easily. You just told me it was on your list.
Yeah.
So that means you were going to watch it.
Well, I mean, it was on my list, and then I took it off because it didn't really seem something.
No,
like,
no,
something
you can't back off and say it was on your list, and then you tell me it's not on your list. No. Which one is it?
I had it on my list. I took it off, and then I put it back on.
Why did you put it back on?
Because it seems like a big enough movie. It was critically acclaimed.
Which critics told you this was critical? I never read anything about this film.
It has like an 85 on Metacritic somehow, so I usually put movies with that high of a rating on back on my list, but it just didn't seem like something going to interest me.
Okay, fair enough. So, Doug, what'd you think?
I went into this movie not knowing really anything about it, aside that it was going to be on Criterion, and I absolutely loved this movie. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was scary at times.
I agree with that.
I thought that the visuals were poetic. I loved it. The best way to describe it for me is it's a social drama with some supernatural romance in it. And I went in knowing nothing about it and just fell in love with these characters. Ada, who is the main character that we follow throughout the film. She's betrothed to a man named Omar, but she doesn't love him. She loves a man named, I'm going to butcher this, Solomon. And things happen where Solomon goes away, and then I don't want to spoil this because I want to get people to see this.
Okay.
Well,
I will say stuff happens and Solomon comes back.
Fair enough. I found this a complete slog to get through.
Yes.
I could not get into it. I tried so hard. I liked the lead Ada a lot. But I got so confused. Eventually, obviously, it makes sense at the end. I understand what's going on. But I didn't find this interesting at all. I thought there were too many subplots going on, and they should have focused a little bit tighter on the main story. And I found it, I was getting pulled left, right, until you get to about the second half, and then it starts coming together a bit more. And I found the last third was okay. But I just found they spoke three different languages, which is fine, because they say French. I'm like, they use French maybe for two lines in this whole movie.
I see.
And I just found it a complete slog to get through. I couldn't recommend this to anybody. I didn't enjoy it.
Oh, we're on opposite spectrums.
Oh, yeah.
I'm inclined to agree with Simon. Cinematography's lovely.
Oh, beautiful cinematography. I like
it. Music is great.
Yes.
Like that shot with the women walking down the street. Like, I like the direction. I thought it was capably directed. The long shots are fine, but I just thought they went on too long. Yeah, I agree. Ada was great. Story-wise, I didn't know why they were so after him for setting a fire on a mattress.
Fire on the mattress.
I liked the supernatural romance you talked about, but, okay, I don't think it spoils much, but, like, the fact that they go off to sea because they want wages, I thought that commentary was interesting a little bit. But I saw a movie at, like, TIFF a couple of 6 years ago called Sea Fog that never got released that I thought handled the immigration aspect much better. I thought this was so boring. I couldn't wait for it to finish.
I have to agree with you, Daniel. I tried. I really gave this film a full effort. I gotta say it took me two viewings to finish it, and that wasn't because the film was boring, just because I had to go out. And that was pre-virus. Of last week, or the week before. Yeah, last week I was watching it, so I did have to do some shopping. I just found this a complete slog. I liked parts of the supernatural angle. Like I said, I really felt the story should have been tighter for me. And yeah. That's just me. I found it was going too many. I didn't understand the whole Omar Ada storyline. I didn't think it was needed. I really thought it was more time filler than anything else.
I think that just showed where Ada's heart truly is. It added to the tragedy of the story that she was betrothed to a man she didn't love. And then in turn, you also feel bad for Omar because Omar wasn't a bad guy.
No.
He was just betrothed to a woman who didn't love him. And no matter how much he tried, she just didn't love him. And I thought that added to the tragedy of the story.
I guess so.
I really thought that the movie was poetic and beautiful, and I was sucked in from the beginning. I loved this film. I thought it was great.
I was bored from the beginning, sir.
I'm with Dan. I'm like 15 minutes in going, I'm going to go.
40 minutes happened, I was like, wait, nothing's happened.
Nothing has happened. I agree. So
I guess the Omar aspect, that's just for the social commentary that she wants a secure life in this country, which is, what country is it, Jakarta? Or is that a city?
Jakarta is a city.
Jakarta was the city, Senegal was the country.
Oh, okay. See, like... Yeah, this isn't my experience. I mean, obviously, it's not none of our experiences, but I forgot all about the country of Senegal. I couldn't have told you where it was, even.
Africa, isn't it?
Yes.
That's why
the group of men going by sea to Spain, that's a huge trip. That's a huge risk, as it obviously was. But they were so in debt, they needed money so bad that they thought they had no recourse but to take a hugely treacherous boat trip to Spain to find work.
I agree. Okay. I don't think they had any other choice.
Yes. See, I guess I didn't get the scope of that, of how far it was from Spain.
Well, speaking of work, I guess that leads us up to American Factory.
Yes. There's a documentary, so no stars, but it's produced by the Obamas.
Surprisingly.
I actually was fairly surprised that the Obamas produced a movie that was, at least in part, so anti-union.
Yeah, but is this movie really anti-union?
Well, the one guy was who, Senator Brown, when he mentioned unions in the opening, in the speech at the opening of the factory, the one guy, I think his name was Dave, was like, that's it, he's never coming back, he's blocked.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he went nuts, Dave.
Yes.
Dave was having issues. I thought this film was fascinating at times. I'm like, it didn't blow me away. I don't know, understand why it won the Oscar. I don't know. I haven't seen the other one, so maybe the other ones might be more appealing. I did find it interesting, though, how the line I read when the guy said, don't worry, we'll have him fired in 2 weeks, and they fired all the union people. They won the union. They just started taking them out. And then I read afterwards, the guy, the president said, oh, we didn't just say that. We didn't say it. It was all in the translation. I'm like, nobody, you said that. You guys do look like evil. I think I thought the most interesting part of the film was the cultures. The Chinese culture as opposed to the American culture and how they work differently. I'm not saying either one's right, but I get it. And I thought the Chinese people were somewhat liking the American way of life a little bit more by the end of the film.
Well, yeah, halfway through when the Americans went over to see how the factory was run in China, some of that stuff was crazy. They only get 2 days off a month and stuff.
Yeah.
Just the comparison between American workers and Chinese workers.
Was the guy grabbing glass with no gloves?
Yeah.
And what was up with that crazy party?
The Chinese New Year party
was so bizarre.
See, that was my favorite part. I really liked the part where he went out, like, choked up because it's like, oh, thanks for showing me your culture. I thought that was interesting. This didn't do much for me. I've seen maybe 20 documentaries in my life. I've only loved 3, Side by Side, Free Solo, and another one. Oh, Super Size Me.
Well, those are 3 good, really solid documentaries. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just this didn't do much for me. I don't know much about the factory life. I thought the wages and that aspect was interesting, and I thought the culture clash was interesting, but I just couldn't really get into it.
Well, maybe there's something more for me and Doug. If I get a $2 raise at my job, I work hourly. That's a big difference in my life.
Mm-hmm.
A huge difference over the course of a year, $2. And I thought it was really weird how right after the union got defeated, or just before, they go, $2 more for everybody. I'm like, going, wow. I just, they're trying to promote that so you won't vote pro-union. I'm kind of like, well, I just, at times, I wish we had more interviews with the Chinese people. I mean, they do a bit of it, but they spend more time with the Americans, which I think I know who they are and get a little bit more sense of security from them and know what they're going to do. I wanted a bit more on what the Chinese people thought of the culture and were they blending in, because they keep talking about how they miss their family, but the one guy brought his family over at the end.
Well, I think they focused more on the Americans because the directors of this film, Dayton is their hometown.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So this was an incredibly personal story for the directors.
Okay, that explains a lot then. I did like the guy walking in with the union sign walking around. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I got a chuckle out of that. You're saying this film's not pro-union. I don't know. I think it straddles both sides fairly well. It shows this. I like behind the boardroom shots.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very interesting and how the guy said, we're going to bring automation in. We're going to eliminate 30 more jobs. So you can already see they're already thinking 5 years, 2 years, a year down the road. to make the factory more productive. And I think that's everywhere, though. I don't think it's just the Chinese. I think it's every company.
And I probably misspoke when I said the film was anti-union. I should have said that there were people, not characters, because they're real people, but there were people who were vehemently anti-union.
Yeah, and they got to keep their jobs.
Yes, and it was interesting that their side was shown as much on a film produced by the Obamas.
Maybe that's strange to the point that Obama's producing saying, hey, Trump hasn't created any jobs, the Chinese are.
That's true.
Maybe it's more on that angle. I don't know. I mean, I thought it was good that the Chinese were trying it. I mean, they're not paying good wages, but my argument is maybe that's the going rate, and if you don't want to do it, go get something else. But from what I'm hearing from the workers, there was no other jobs in Dayton, Ohio. This is it.
Mm-hmm. I had a question.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll do one point first. I think the one interesting part for me was it was very funny at times, but one part I liked was just the culture part. Just of the one part where when they see in China that they're lined up and they're very orderly, and then when they try to do that back in America, they're very confused and it's very awkward. I thought that was interesting. But my question is, I think this is why I didn't really completely get it. I wasn't sure if it was hyperbole, or just an actual fact when one of the characters says, this is one of the most important projects in American history. Was that hyperbole, or no?
I think it is.
Why?
I think for them it is because it, and I guess historically, too, because it is a foreign country coming in to build, to make a factory in America. Okay. So it, if not the first time, one of the first times, or on this grand of a scale that this happened.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks. Yeah, I
totally agree with Doug.
Over my head sometimes, you know? Fair enough.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just one of those things you got to think. I don't know. I also want to point out, I thought it was weird when the Chinese were having a meeting without the Americans. Usually when you have a meeting, everybody has a meeting at once. But it seemed to have two separate meetings. One for the Chinese people and one for the American people. And I noticed the Chinese people are always eating. So did they not get a lunch break? Because the Americans weren't eating during that time.
They might not have gotten a lunch break, or that might have been their lunch break that they used for the meeting because they could be under Chinese rules.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. There seemed to be two sets of rules, and I would argue that there's one set that the American, because the guy just said I got fired because I couldn't find something on the computer in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? That seems a little fudge. And he agreed. The guy said, yeah, I knew they were coming after me, so that's fine. Because I was pro-union. I'm like, I accept that. But what are you going to do? I think it's an interesting watch. I really did.
I got to say there was one part that it was small, but it really brought a smile to my face, was when the one guy was talking about how he invited his Chinese friends over for Thanksgiving dinner, and it ended up being, instead of 4 or 5, it ended up being 13. And they all went out to shoot guns. And
The brave
rode on his Harley with him, and just to get the American experience. And then when he said, "I'll never forget that day," that made me smile. That lightened my heart.
Is that because you're an American?
It's because I'm a cold, callous human being, and seeing happiness and joy put upon others is foreign to me.
Wow. Okay. I guess that leads us perfectly into Freak Show then.
Fuck yeah. Okay, yeah. Starring Alex Lawther, Ian Nelson, Anna Sophia Robb, Celia Weston, Bette Midler, Abigail Breslin, Willa Fitzgerald, Larry Pine, and one of the weirdest cameos by John McEnroe.
John McEnroe's in this? Where was
he? He played the gym teacher.
Oh my god, that was him? He's only in for like 2 seconds.
Yes, that's why I was like, okay, why are you here, John McEnroe, to play angry gym teacher? And he wasn't even that angry.
No. I really enjoyed this first half of this film immensely. First half, I was loved it. Then I felt the second half, it just went into a sappy story, which I didn't want. Until the very end. I liked the very end a lot. So I felt a little lull maybe in the middle of it. But I don't know, this is a film all about acceptance, isn't it, Dan? You know?
Yeah, it's about individuality. Ooh, Daniel, you're an idiot. Individuality. And acceptance as well. But I felt like it contradicted itself so many times when Flip wanted him to tone it down a bit at school.
So yes, that was a big problem for me. I couldn't see Flip doing that. I'm like, that's a change in character.
Yeah. And I didn't, you know, I thought it was funny, like a little funny the first time. I just didn't think much of it. I watched it again today. I have problems with what happens. It's just like the coma aspect, and that it just feels like it escalates really quickly.
Yeah, for no reason. There was no reason for that scene. I'm like, okay, other than for the rest of the film.
Like, the only reason might be that Flip wants to help him now, but he only helps him because he fakes, like, a stroke, and he's like, oh, shit, I have to take care of you. But couldn't. I mean, okay, so Anna Sophia Robb couldn't be in this consistently because she was doing classes at NYU.
Uh-huh.
But if she wasn't, though, I think Flip could have been written out entirely, and she could have just been the person that helps him.
Absolutely agree. Okay, so that makes a lot more sense on structure issues I have. Okay, I get that now.
Yeah, and...
Then why cast her?
Sorry?
Why cast Anna Sophia Robb if she can't do the film?
I think they filmed it in New York, and it's like, oh, hey, Anna Sophia, do you want to do a movie? And I'm not mad. I love Anna Sophia Robb. I just wish she was in it more.
She was the best character in the film.
Yeah, and it annoys me that she's so, like, Alex, or Billy, sorry, is so self-absorbed he doesn't even catch her name. And it's like, okay, that's a bit through.
But that was a good line. Okay, it works for the film.
Your best friend.
I think this film really, you're right, the part when he has after the coma before the pageant show was terrible. It lost its drive. I thought it was flowing beautifully up until that point. And then it sort of went, okay, stop. Let's have a coma and we'll set up. We need that for the end of the film. Like, okay. I mean, and then the film's talking about acceptance. But, I mean, even Cecilia Weston's character has to accept him because she cuts the crust off his sandwiches finally. Like, that's a big, it goes on about that. I mean, the film wraps up really nicely that everybody likes each other.
Yeah, I thought the crust bit was awkward just to show that, like, him and his dad were alike kind of thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes at some points I didn't really like Billy because, like, I can understand that he didn't like his dad because he wasn't accepted by him when he was a kid. But the part where the dad actually tries and he's like, oh, I'm doing something very important, and then he sends him a letter to Mouth was kind of eh for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the villains aren't villains in this film. There really are no villains. I mean, those cheerleaders were terrible. Horrible actresses, all of them.
Okay. I like Willa Fitzgerald, but Abigail Breslin cannot play mean. And also, I don't think she's been good since she's grown up.
No, she's been terrible. And the football players weren't really evil. I mean, they do call them a term against...
Edwards many times.
Yeah, and I'm like, whatever. That's just felt so forced at times throughout this film. I enjoyed the film. Should have been better.
Very cliched. Okay, but we're pretty much done, but the worst character in a movie of bad characters for me is the Bernard guy that keeps going up to him, like, oh... Like, and he keeps, like, oh, what are you looking at, F-word? And then he's like, okay, so you're doing this because you're in the closet, and then you try to kiss him? It's
terrible.
Really?
Terrible.
Such a bad character. Holy crap.
Unbelievable. It would not have happened. It didn't make any sense to me.
No.
At all. I mean, I could see him being jealous of Billy. I think that's where they were trying to go.
Yeah, just that he can be himself and have his freak flag fly, which I like that dialogue when he's giving his speech.
I loved his speech. I thought his speech was great in the purple suit.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty solid. I liked the costuming a lot. I thought that worked at all times. I don't really felt Bette Midler had a lot to do.
No, she just showed up to do a cheer and kind of cheer him on when he was a kid, but she was just really a really shitty person.
Yeah, I like to drink a lot. We got it.
Yeah. Like, okay. You know, I don't think it's a terrible movie. I just have a lot of problems with it.
Okay, Daniel, open the vault.
The vault is open, master. I'm trying to do an Igor thing, but I lost it.
Don't worry, I'm going to edit most of that out. I'm going to keep
your
random talking here. We'll stay in. Doug, the Invisible Man from 1933, which I know you loved.
Oh.
I actually did. I adored this.
Oh, sorry.
I could do the cast list. Sorry.
My bad.
Directed by James Whale, starring Claude Rains, Gloria Stewart, Rylan Harrigan, and Henry Travers. Okay, go Doug.
I love this movie. I'm a huge James Whale fan, and I absolutely love this movie. I thought the special effects for 1933 were astounding. The invisibility, and then the scene towards the end when he falls into the snow and you see the body shape puff out. For 1933, that was incredible. I also thought Claude Rains was amazing as Griffin in this film. His maniacal laughter is what Mark Hamill chose as his Joker laugh for the animated series.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I loved this movie from beginning to end. It was 1 hour, 11 minutes long, just short, sweet, to the point. It was fantastic. I loved it.
Well, I think Doug took every point I wanted away from me. So I'll focus on other things. I think the set design, wonderful.
Yes.
I love the way he just shows up, rents a room, and goes in, and they don't really know. I liked all the characters. They looked like they were supposed to be there. In every scene, what was going on, I believed it should have happened. Supposed to be Claude Rains, but backed out due to money. Just so you know. And I have to back up everything else you said. And how did they get the footprints in the snow? I still can't figure out how they did that. And I like how they ripped the bandages off and he starts laughing off screen. I'm like, it worked perfectly for me.
Hello.
Hello?
No, I'm just saying that because you guys love it, but I don't. I love the... It's short, and I love that it was short, because I couldn't do an hour 40 of this.
Oh, absolutely. I could take another half an hour, no problem.
No thanks. I love the effects are great. The set design, is great. Claude Rains is great. The laugh is good. I like the concept of the Visible Man. I was kind of bored at times.
God, you're on the wrong show.
Okay. I was bored. It's boring.
No.
I don't know.
I have to 100% disagree with you on this one, Daniel. Recommend.
Sorry?
I'd give it a full recommend.
No, I know everyone loves it. I'm very much in the minority. I didn't hate it. It just didn't do much for me. Also, Gloria Stewart. I didn't realize that was Old Rose in Titanic. But in 1933, the woman could not act to save her own life.
Oh, she can't Titanic either. She's not missing anything.
Titanic.
She did another movie with James Whale called The Old Dark House. If you like this movie, watch The Old Dark House. It is just as good. So maybe Daniel won't like it, but Simon, you might.
Well, I'll wait till it appears on one of our lists, and I will watch it.
I don't hate it. I'm glad I saw it. It's a classic. It just didn't do much for me.
Fair enough. You guys ready for some quick trivia before we go?
Yes, sir.
It's all from CNET. I found my CNET cards. So I need to remove...
I want CNET.
Pardon?
I want CNET Junior so I can win.
I can't find one. I'm looking. I currently am. Name the actor who appeared in all the following films. Bite the Bullet, In Like Flint, and Great Escape.
Steve McQueen?
Nope, because he's not in Like Flint.
Okay.
Ted? Nope, James Colbert. Come on, guys. Got to watch In Like Flint. We did it on the show. Name the actor who appeared in all the following films. Jaws 3D, Enemy Mine, and The Deep.
Quaid.
Nope.
Not this. No idea.
Louis Gossett Jr. Name the actor who appeared in all the following films. Go, Jerry Maguire, and Pay It Forward.
Not Haley Joel Osment.
Lipnicki?
Nope.
Damn.
Jay Moore. Name the actress who appeared in all the following films. Jack Frost, Jerry Maguire, and Holy Man.
It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of it, though. Who plays Jerry Maguire's wife?
That's right. Kelly Preston. Okay, last question.
I'll get a half a point.
No, you don't get zero. You guys bombed them all. What actress appeared in all the following films? That Thing You Do, 2 Days in the Valley, and Ranger Games. Oh, come on, guys.
I don't do trivia anymore.
Liv Taylor?
Charlie's so wrong. You guys have never seen Ranger Games?
No.
Not since it came out.
Oh, I love Ranger Games. Absolutely enjoy it. I went on Charlie's St. Ron run, watched everything she ever did.
Oh, she's made some bad films, too.
Yeah, but I was at the 2 Days in the Valley premiere. I'll give you a quick story. And I'm waiting to meet the chick from Terry Hatcher. So Terry Hatcher gets out of this car, and this blonde woman comes out behind her. My jaw dropped. I said, Terry who? And she was Charlize Theron. She's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life in person. It was literally like, I didn't care if Terry Hatcher. I'm like, you're blocking my view, Terry. Move away. Just move along, please.
Yeah.
So there you go. And 2 Days in the Valley is a terrible film. If I remember correctly, it's been a long time since I've seen it. Okay, I'll give you guys one last one. Name the actor who appeared in all the following movies. Charlie's Angels, Kingpin, and Wild Things.
Crispin Glover.
Not in any of the films.
Oh, no, he's in the second one. I don't.
Denise Richards.
No, Bill Murray.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, come on, Doug. I thought you would have that one because he plays the lawyer in Wild Things. He's Bosley in Charlie's Angels, and he plays the bad guy in Kingpin. Well, guys, if they make
it. I forgot it was Wild Things.
If they make it.
We won't know the answers to it.
Fair enough. Exactly. Good night, all.